Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. Today, we're going to talk some USC football post-signing day with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist. Does a great job for us at USCFootball.com. Wanted to get Dan's take on a lot of things on the team on signing day. We were down there together at the press conference, kind of get your thoughts on that. We haven't had a podcast for about a week or so, so I apologize for that. We'll get into that in a second. There's some interesting Steve Sarkisian news. There's some stuff going on with scout.com, and we wanted to get to all that, and we will, and plus your questions. If you want to leave us a voicemail question, you can do that by calling 641-715-3900, extension 816-646, or you can go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. On the left side of the page, you can click there, leave a voicemail, and we will get it and play it on the podcast for you. If you want to just email us, that's what most people do, podcast@uscfootball.com. We're on iTunes. Please subscribe. Leave us some positive feedback. That's always a good thing. We're on Audio Boom. We're on Stitcher Radio. A lot of different ways you can consume the Peristyle Podcast. And without further ado, I want to bring in Dan Weber. What is up, Dan? How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Another news-filled day, starting early. So USC, you can't get away from it. It's always going to be there.
There's always something, and you know, obviously it was crazy last week. And I want to play this voicemail right off the bat for you, Dan. And then there's a couple other things we're going to get to before we jump into all the regular questions. But I'm going to play this.
Yeah, Ryan, this is Jeff in the OC. Just had a curious question. Signing day. There's no podcast up this week. I thought that would be important, and you guys would definitely have either a day of or post signing day report. What happened? You guys are kind of running your show just like the Pac-12 network. No, you guys do a great job. I was just curious. I know you were doing something live down at the L.A. Coliseum area, but didn't catch anything online other than, you know, your premium service. All right. Take care, guys.
So,
Well, I will say one thing. If you compare us to the Pac-12 network, there is one difference. I just saw this statistic yesterday. The Pac-12 network has 176 full-time employees. Think about that. 176.
Wow.
That's probably more than the Big Ten and the SEC combined. But, man.
And they make a lot less money than those.
If only we had 170. We could do a podcast every hour on the hour if we had 176 of us.
Yeah, and so just to let people know, yeah, we did live instant analysis from the USC campus. We had a signing day event on USC's campus. We had tons and tons of content go up on USCFootball.com. We did our premium podcast for subscribers only. That was up the day before signing day. And then, you know, I got out of town the day after signing day. I got some stuff to do. A little vacation, went to Arizona, got to watch the Waste Management Golf Tournament, which was a lot of fun. And was out there to with some friends for the Super Bowl. So we're back. I came back yesterday, and we're doing the podcast again today. So sorry that there was no podcast for a week, but there was plenty of stuff up on USCFootball.com. But, man, they love the podcast, Dan.
Yeah, we're trying to keep the demand high, so we don't want to overdo it. You know, we don't want to saturate the market. We'll just we'll make you cry for more.
And they've definitely been crying for more, which we love. We're glad that there's a lot of demand for the podcast. But, you know, we do have lives outside that. So after signing day, it was a lot of work. So we take a little break, and that's okay. But we'll be back. We're back here. We'll try to do a couple shows this week and kind of get back into it. There was also signing day was also busy for us, not just because of signing day, but scout.com was purchased by CBS Sports. And I want to go too much into the detail, but I know there's some people that were worried, oh, what's this mean, or blah, blah, blah. Definitely overall, I think it's a good thing. This was something that there was going to be a bidding process for Scout. I guess you could say the former executive at Scout, he was really good. I'll say he's really good at raising money, but he was also very good at spending it. Scout ended up owing a bunch of money to creditors. There was a, and they felt the best way to go through it was go through a bankruptcy, Chapter 11. And then whoever buys Scout would get a, you know, clean bill. So there wouldn't be any of that debt or liability hanging over the company. So I think CBS got a really killer deal. And now we are part, of the CBS family. Of course, they own one of our competitors, 247. I do think overall, contraction, you know, just the consolidation in the industry is not a bad thing. But you know, they've come out and said, CBS has said they're going to keep Scout separate. So everything's going to be exactly the same. People were worried, like asked me, is the Parrot Spell podcast changing? No, everything's the same. Nothing's changing. We're still cover it. You know, we're in a good position because we're the dominant USC site in the industry. No one's even close to us. So no matter what, I mean, we were going to be okay. And I was telling people that from the beginning. But yeah, it looks good. I think it looks positive. I think it's going to be a good thing for the technology on Scout. You know, I like the technology they were using over there at CBS and 247. So it should be a good thing. But that was another kind of crazy signing day thing that was going on. Another ball in the air to juggle, Dan.
Yeah, and I really liked the, I think it was, which site was it? Awful Announcing or whatever. The site that someone interviewed, somebody that, one of the sites that specialized in media interviewed the executives of at CBS. And I thought they really got what's going on with Scout in terms of, you know, describing Scout as, you know, the premier team coverage site with, you know, with the best reporters and the best analysts and, you know, at the team level, and that they really wanted that to continue, and that they understood that, you know, nobody does it better than Scout when it comes to all the, you know, the stuff we're trying to do at USCFootball.com. I thought I was really impressed with the CBS executives, the way they described what they thought Scout brought to them. And I thought they got it exactly right. And I was real impressed with, you know, what they see going forward.
Yeah, so it should be a good thing, but that was some other news that was going on. And then this morning, so our last kind of piece of news before we jump into the regular podcast, I guess. You know, I don't know if you guys know, but about 16 months ago, Steve Sarkisian was the head coach of USC and got fired. And Clay Helton took over. And they went to the Rose Bowl last year and they signed a top five class. But Steve Sarkisian, in the meantime, sued USC, took a analyst job at Alabama. Lane Kiffin decided to leave to go to Florida Atlantic. Nick Saban, the head coach at Alabama, kicked him out early. You know, timing was a little weird. Yeah, it was right before the national championship game. Named Steve Sarkisian the offensive coordinator, which was, you know, he takes over for the national championship game. They end up losing that game to Clemson. And a couple weeks later, he's now moving on to the team that just lost in the Super Bowl, the Atlanta Falcons. So Steve Sarkisian falling up again. He's now going to be on a really maybe the best takeover, maybe the best offense in the league over the last 5 years or so. And he would get, you know, his tenure at Alabama for offensive coordinator was one game. He was 0-1 there. So that went on this morning, Dan. What are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I mean, Sark is in the right place at the right time, I think, so often. And I think it goes back to, I mean, I think Pete has always, Pete Carroll has always, you know, Sark's always been a favorite. I think Pete played a very big part in Sark being hired at USC. I don't think there's any question about it. I think Pete was the deciding factor. And then, you know, Sark, having been at Washington in Seattle, was there with when Dan Quinn, the Atlanta Falcons head coach now, was the defensive coordinator for Pete at the Seahawks. So I'm sure, you know, that relationship goes back to Seattle. And there's another connection is that J.K. McKay, who kind of oversaw the group that, you know, decided to bring Sark here, his brother, Rich, is the president of the Falcons. So you've got all kinds of little, you know, little connections, and I think it's a better, you know, it's a better situation for Sark. He's strictly offense and coordinator. He's got the highest scoring team in the league. It, you know, there's some pressure there, But, you know, I don't know that there's more pressure than he had, you know, coming in for one game to coach the, you know, Alabama in the championship game. And and he's got a really good quarterback, which, you know, as much as if you just stayed at Alabama, you don't exactly have, you know, you got an athlete, a great athlete, and a great competitor, Jalen, you know, and the Hurts kid, but you don't really have, you know, that kind of, you know, developed, you know, sophisticated quarterback that, you know, can pull off all the stuff that probably Sark would like to be able to run. So, you know, Sark just, you know, he's still got a lot of pressure on him, though. I mean, you know, they're going to expect him to win. You know, and you're not allowed to go down if you're already the highest scoring team in the NFL, and you should have won the Super Bowl. So it'd be interesting to see how this, you know, how this all works out. But it is amazing when you watch, what happens to, I mean, you know, Sark is ahead, is got the best offensive coordinator job in the NFL. Justin Wilcox is the head coach at Cal. You know, Ed Orgeron is head coach at LSU. I mean, it's pretty amazing just keeping track of these USC, you know, assistants and head coaches and ex-head coaches. There's something always happening. We've said it 1,000 times. If it involves USC football, it's happening. Somewhere, sometime, every time, all the time. Just, it's pretty amazing.
You even had like Lane Kiffin before signing day put out that promotional video that was just awful. And then he came out and said he did it on purpose. And to his credit, people were talking about him. You know, they had the best signing class in the Sun Belt Conference. Yes, like the former USC coaches seem to always be making news, Dan.
Yeah, whether they want to or not. And I think Lane kind of wants to. Doesn't always know how to do it. It's one of those things that, oh, I don't care what you say about me, just spell my name right. I'm not sure that's exactly how Lane approaches it, but at least they have, today they've got something to talk about on the Paul Feinbaum show that won't be Lane. It'll be Sark. I mean, you know, that's all they're going to talk about today and maybe the rest of the week for those Alabama fans, you know? I mean, when you think about it, Lane left Tennessee, and now Sark has left Alabama. Those folks in the SEC, they might not be hiring any more ex-USC head coaches. Oh, wait a minute. LSU already did. I mean, when you think about that, it's SEC, SEC, SEC. And yet, you know, here comes the USC, former USC assistants who are now, for at least a time, dominating the SEC, hiring in whatever process, that it's just pretty amazing how that's all happened.
It is pretty crazy. And it does. It's just, there's always,
you wouldn't think that going to SEC would be a stepping stone going to USC would be a stepping stone to the SEC. It just, we'd have never thought like that, but that's how it's kind of working out.
Yeah. Baffling. But yeah, so lots of crazy stuff, going on in the world. And for the Sark thing before we go, once he left, and the lawsuit was filed and that was a big thing to me, Dan, that said, okay, well, he can't coach in college again. You can't do what he did and then sue your former employer when when you did obvious things, you know, in public eye that were completely incorrect and out of line and putting kids in weird spots and all that kind of stuff. I didn't think he'd be back in college, let alone his next job being college, let alone being, you know, at Alabama, the offensive coordinator for Nick Saban. I thought it would be more of a quarterback coach or something in the NFL. Again, this is higher than I thought he would get, where you're talking about the best offense in the country, you know, in the NFL, he gets to take that over. You know, you saw what Julio Jones was able to do and Matt Ryan and all those guys. I don't know what happened in the second half of that game, but, this is kind of the path, closer to the path, I guess, Dan, that I thought he would go right afterwards. But, you know, in pure Sark fashion, it was a, It was a strange way to get there from A to B.
I mean, Sark is really good at people skills. I mean, he is, you know, when he's at his best, people like him. You know, people get along with him. He gets along with people, you know, so, and they just showed some highlights this morning on ESPN, and they showed Sark running out in his USC coaching gear before a game, and I'm looking and I'm thinking, wow, you realize he didn't look good at all. There were times, and I would mention that at practice after practice, and people would look at me like, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, but you could tell something wasn't right. And when they show you, you know, shots of Sark coaching Alabama, you think, boy, okay, he looks better. He looks much better and much more, you know, like, you know, he's just not suffering from, you know, whatever it was, all the stuff, you know, that was happening at USC. But, you know, that Sark could be very winning and very, you know, he likes to like people. You know, he was kind of walled off a little bit at USC from us because of what was going on that we didn't realize. But at his best, he's really good with people. And, you know, if it's, as other people who have watched him said, what he wants to do is be a play caller and a play designer and an offensive coordinator. And that's what he's getting a chance to be. So, he won't have to do, and you know, the things that head coaches have to do, they won't have to be responsible for stuff. And maybe this kind of focus is exactly what he needs, but there's somebody looking out for Sark, that's for sure.
All right, well, let's move on to our quote-unquote regular part of the podcast and answer some more of your questions. Mike in Portland, he says, I keep thinking every day there will be a new podcast. I'm anxious to hear yours and Dan's distilled wisdom on the recruiting class. It will also be interesting to see if any of the Helton haters call in to say maybe they were a little quick to judge him and maybe give him some credit. Now that the football program is back on track and it appears the basketball program is heading in the right direction, do you think anyone who buried Pat Hayden might have a few kind words for him as well, or maybe all the success is in spite of Clay and Pat? That's Mike, class of 1967 from Portland.
Yeah, Mike, I think we maybe tend to personalize some of this more than we should. I mean, I think USC, I mean, take a look at the last two teams that just really got hammered with the NCAA, Alabama and USC. Alabama really took a dive. I mean, they had at least one losing season, but they dropped off the map. USC never did. So I think that's a tribute to USC. USC got hit harder for much less than Alabama, for example. And yet USC kept its head above water, and that's a tribute to, you know, the tradition, the history, the location, the school itself, and the people that were here no matter how many times they shot themselves in the foot. They just kind of, USC survived through that. So, yeah, I think it is a lot of it. We may be, you know, you'll see people say, boy, thank God Sark was here. He gave us the number one recruiting class. Hey, come on. I mean, head coaches get credit for what happens good and bad and all that. But USC was the big part of that recruiting class, and USC always will be. So I think we maybe overstated. I think in the hiring of Clay, I've said this before, I think Pat went along with a hiring process that wasn't really Pat's. All we know in that hiring process that related to Pat was that they brought in Greg Schiano, was the one guy that, you know, Pat brought in. And, ex-NFL, Rutgers, Ohio State assistant. I think the process to hire Clay happened above Pat. And I think Pat was kind of informed that this is how it was going to go. that's what everything that I've, you know, been told about how that went down. So, you know, I think we overstayed. I mean, I'm not sure that he was all that involved in the Sark hiring. I think there were other people that went along with the hiring of Sark. So maybe he gets too much criticism for hiring Sark. Although, as it all played out, there were some things that probably had to happen and didn't. But I think we tend to personalize those kinds of things that involve coaches and athletic directors maybe more than we should. We'll see about, you know, Enfield. I mean, I'm hopeful. I was hopeful when they hired him. I loved what he did at, Florida Gulf Coast. And we've been waiting to see that show up. And he's certainly gotten the recruiting act together. And now they can get it together, you know, on the floor. You got to give credit to, I think it was Pat and Steve Lopes that, and Steve Lopes was a big part of, going out and making the decision. And obviously that happened at the end of, that NCAA tournament where Florida Gulf Coast, you know, won the first couple of rounds and played really well. And USC jumped on him. I'm not sure the process had gone all that well until then. And we'll see how it plays out. Andy's a good guy, good person. And, if he really is able to keep this team playing tough-minded, physically and mentally, tough-minded basketball, where they physically they're tough and mentally they're tough and they don't, take time off and all of that. You know, they're 20-4. They need to beat. You know, they've got Oregon coming up. They've got UCLA on the road. Oregon at home. UCLA and Arizona on the road. You want to see them really make some progress and not, obviously they did well against UCLA, but Arizona, they had a shot and totally weren't ready to play and made a run at the end. And Oregon, they weren't ready to play at all. So you want to see a team with the talent USC has, young as it is and maybe not great depth, to be able to play with, kind of a tough-minded effort against those three. They play them, back to back to back. So, we'll know a lot more about this team in a couple of weeks.
All right. Thanks for that one. Let's move on to Terrence in High Point, North Carolina. He said, I really appreciate you both doing a great job on the podcast. You all made USC football so much fun this year. Well, thank you for that, Terrence. I'm concerned about the number of commitments that seem to be decommitting right now. Is there something I should be concerned about? So this was kind of funny because this was a little bit before signing day. I'm seeing we got some great recruits to commit, including the defensive lineman flip from Washington, but I've seen several decommits since Clay Helton has been the coach. And this concerns me because I feel Clay is doing a good job and he is a good player's coach. What are your thoughts? By the way, so proud of the Trojans winning the Rose Bowl. Great game, Terrence in North Carolina. So I wanted to read you this one, Dan, just because this was kind of some of the questions we were getting leading up till signing day.
I think the decommitments, that's what happens. Everybody offers more, players than they're going to be able to sign. And I think the decommitments are, the natural result of, bigger, better players coming in at the end of the process. And, those kids that decommit realize I'm not high on your list. And, this might be a tougher place to be. And I think USC went after, they reeled it in terms of, after September. I mean, it was hard to get ahead on and make a lot of inroads on some of those really, really top players when you're 1-3 and really struggling and who knows who's going to be the coach next year and all that kind of thing. So I think they figured out, and exactly rightly so, get it done on the field. And obviously you win 9 straight. You beat Washington at Washington. You win the Rose Bowl the way they did. You've gotten it right on the field. And then that gives you the ability, but you're playing catch up a little bit. And I thought they did a good job in focusing on west of the Rockies, just two other players, one from Texas, Levi Jones, and, the Lichtenstein kid from Florida, that was it. and they aimed exactly where they could hit the target, and they did. And, you know, maybe the only kid they stayed involved with was a little bit of a long shot, Aubrey Solomon out of Georgia, who was willing to leave the South, you know, and turn his back on Georgia and Alabama, but wasn't close enough to USC and went to Michigan. But, you know, I think that the decommitments were not a bad thing. I think the decommitments were a good thing, of a recruiting process that just kept getting better and better, and more of the players that you really felt like you had to have at USC. And so, yeah, I didn't see any of the decommitments as a negative at all.
All right, let's move on from that. Let's go Ted in Manhattan Beach. He says, great job by the entire staff on getting all the skinny regarding the 2017 class. He's talking about the USCfootball.com staff. Thank you for that, Ted. He said, it was phenomenal. I believe the class reflects two common cliches. One, defense wins championships. Two, football is won in the trenches. My question is for you and Dan, with the arrival of these new bodies, how do you think the defensive scheme may change in 2017 and 2018 if everyone can perform? Do you think we'll stay 100% 2-5-4 formation? And if we do play more 3-3-4, how do you and Dan think this would improve the defense going forward? Thanks again. Fight on. Ted, Manhattan Beach.
Ted, I think a good question. I think, I mean, I like the whole idea that Clancy kind of is in that same area as Bill Belichick, where you change your defense based on two things: what your players can do and who you're playing that week. And I love the idea that, you know, you hear from these NFL guys that they have no idea which way you know, the Patriots are going to line up. And they're going to do something different. And we kept hearing that from teams that, you know, Clancy, they're not sure. They know he's going to do something different and try to, you know, take something away from you in ways that maybe you haven't seen, but they don't know for sure what that is. And you're forcing them to always make adjustments in the game. And I love that about Clancy. So, but I think if you start with the premise of using your players to the best of their ability, I really like, you know, this defensive line group. I like, you know, the tackles. It wouldn't surprise me if Marlon and Jay Tufele are both in the rotation. And, you know, I like what I see physically from those two guys. I like their athleticism, their pad level, the way they use their hands. I like it that Marlon was a, you know, state wrestling champ. I like his low center of gravity. I mean, I like the fact, and I know people, you know, kept falling in love with, say, Noah Jefferson at whatever, 6'6 and 315 or whatever. But those two guys are 6'3, 295. And I really like that size. And I like it, you know, that's similar to what Alabama decided to do in almost all their defensive front, is they, you know, lost an average of 20 pounds a man last year. And so I like that, and I think Clancy will be able to play more down guys. However, you're limited a little bit by the fact that you're playing in the Pac-12, and you're playing a lot of, you know, spread teams, and you know that you really have to be able to, you know, counter what they're trying to do. But if you've got more athletic down linemen, you've got a better chance to play the three-man front against a lot of these Pac-12 offenses, or at least more. You can do that more often than maybe you did last year. But I think, you know, to try to make a general statement, until Clancy has seen spring ball and the new guys and who can he trust and all of that, or, you know, what does Porter Gustin look like when he comes back? What does Connor Murphy look like? What does Oluwole, you know, Batika look like? I think it's, you know, what about John Houston playing inside next to Cam Smith? I don't think we know all of how that all goes together until we see them, you know, on the field together, and we see you know, Jamal Cook, and where is he next year as a 6'4", you know, redshirt freshman safety? Or what do Bubba Baldwin and, you know, the Polamalu, you know, kid, how do they fit in with their size, their athleticism? You know, is there a place for them on the field? I think, you know, how do they put five defensive backs? You know, who do they pick as the, you know, the nickel guy? Do they go with one of the bigger, more athletic guys? Do they go with a, you know, cover corner guy? I think, you know, stay tuned. It's going to be fun watching how that all develops. But I think it's the right question. I just don't know that we've got the answer at this point, nor should we have it. Too early.
Before we move on, some of the other questions aren't necessarily about the recruiting class per se. Maybe get your overall thoughts on how Clay Helton was able to close and finish with the number five ranked class in the country.
Well, I think it's a great step when you can basically say west of the Rockies is local recruiting territory for USC. When you can go in and get the best kid out of Portland who's committed to Washington, that's really, like Marlon, that's big. When you go in, you know, to, you know, Phoenix and get a couple of those kids and go to Las Vegas, you know, with Gorman. And again, kind of a more natural, you know, Phoenix kind of a, you know, connection. And you go into Utah, you keep going into Utah and taking their, you know, top kid. I just think it sends a message. And you want to be able to send that message, which USC needs to now start winning Pac-12 championships. And I think that's the way you start, is you go in there and say, you know, if you've got a really special kid in your state, we're going to, you know, he's ours. And I think they did that. And I think they aimed properly, you know, getting 6 out of 6 and not counting Solomon on signing day tells you that, that they really identified and targeted correctly. They built that relationship correctly. And, you know, they found the Levi Jens kid in Austin, Texas, and they found a kid who maybe his mom wanted him to go one place and his dad wanted him to go somewhere else, and he wanted to go to L.A. And they found, you know, and he made a connection with Clancy, for example, in terms of how you want to play defense. And they kept the pipeline open to Florida. And, but I don't know that they had quite the manpower to do much more than that this year with the start that they got, the late start. And, you know, and they don't probably, they don't have the same kind of support staff for the national recruiting effort that, say, an Alabama or an Ohio State or a Michigan or a Clemson have. I mean, they're not there yet, and that's a place you'd really like to see them gear up and realize, you know, that you really do need more support staff. I mean, guys that nobody even dreamed of, that you got to have a creative director doing individualized graphics. You know, how important that is. You know, their guy left Wednesday to go to Tampa Bay, so they're going to have to replace him. But, you know, those are positions that nobody even dreamed of a decade when Pete was coaching. There wasn't even a thought that you had to have somebody like that that could direct individualized, all kinds of individualized, you know, graphic treatments to these kids. But they're not opening their mail. You need to be able to get to them in another way and put them in your program. So I think that's still to be developed. I think USC, hopefully Clay takes this opportunity now and says, you know, that's the next thing we need to maybe, for example, you know, you don't need a lot of those kids. I mean, what impact Mike Williams had out of Florida coming to USC, what did he do for Pete Carroll's early teams? And what did Leonard Williams do at the end of the sanctions period? You just take those two guys alone out of, you know, a decade and a half. Where would USC's program be without having Mike Williams come early or Leonard Williams, you know, at the end? This would not be the same program. So you don't need a lot of those kids, but when they're there, you got to be able to go in and get them. You got to have the manpower and the time and the ability to recruit somebody in the Eastern time zone and make that connection with USC. But before that, you have to identify those kids. You got to figure out which one will leave the South, which one will come make that trip to USC. And there's more work that you have to do now. I think it's harder probably to, you know, it's more sophisticated work because everybody's working so hard. You know, maybe in the past, if somebody didn't work, you know, all that hard, you could sneak a kid out. Boy, it's not as easy now. You just got to, you know, you got to do a better job of getting to them, and that takes more people.
And that's kind of a good segue to this next question. Adam in Oregon, he said, I dig the podcast, which led me to become a member of the site. Well, thank you for that. I'm glad you welcome to the USCFootball.com Peristyle family. He said, I have a question about the quote-unquote budget that you and Dan touched on previously. For years, everyone has boasted about USC's deep pockets, whether from donor contributions, high revenue, the private school stigma, and or rich alumni who pull the strings behind the scenes. With that in mind, I find it very interesting that this team has fallen behind the likes of Clemson and others when it comes to their recruiting departments. It also seems like other schools like Alabama, the Alabamas and the Michigans of the world, are going above and beyond, adding new roles to their staffs and even hiring coaches out of the NFL as assistants with healthy salaries to match. Does USC not allow financial contributors to boost these areas, or are they only restricted to making donations towards architectural projects? With such a wealthy alum and fan base, it would seem that everyone would want USC competing in these areas with the rest of the big boys of college football. Thanks for providing all of us can't get enoughers with all of the coverage you bring us. Fight on, Adam in Southern Oregon.
Yeah, Adam, good question. Yeah, nobody is allowed to donate strictly to, like, staff. You know, the NCAA, that's a, you know, lack of institutional control. So you basically have to donate to the program, and then the program decides how that money is used. And talking, you know, to people who've been close to the program over the years, one of the problems was that USC didn't need that as much. The combination in the early years of Ed Orgeron and Pete Carroll, you know, by the force of their personality and the way they worked at it, they were so competitive at it. The program was so good. It, you know, you can say, oh, it recruited itself, but it recruited itself with Ed and Pete driving it, and it was hard to say no. And so USC didn't have to do all the things that some of these other places were doing. Now, USC did, you know, get the, you know, they redid Heritage Hall after, you know, the McKay Center came online and got the new practice field. And they did those kinds of things. And they're, you know, scheduled to do the refurbishing of the Coliseum and the redesign and all that, you know, whether that is a wise investment of the $270 million that they've been out, you know, raising. But I think they didn't feel the need. I mean, let's face it. You're Clemson, and this, your stadium is bigger than the town you're in, and, you know, upstate South Carolina. You really got to work hard at bringing people in. And if you're if you're Alabama, you know, you could be saying, well, we're Alabama, but you're still in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And you got to work hard to get people there. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, you know, nice college town, but there's winter there. And so there are kids, you got to work really. So I think, and Ohio State has always been basically, as somebody who, you know, grew up very close to Ohio, went to school there, and always thought that Ohio State was the best pro football franchise in the state of Ohio, way better than the Browns and the Bengals. And they ran it that way. So Ohio State probably didn't have to gear up much to, you know, be the recruiting dynamo that it's become again under Urban Meyer. But those schools just, they had to do that. I mean, think about it. USC hasn't done much of that and went through the worst, most outrageous NCAA sanction period ever and still didn't completely go underwater. I mean, it's absolutely, truly amazing that what some of the advantages are. And some of them you can't take away from USC. You can't take away that they've had the most NFL Hall of Famers, or that they've got the most NFL first-round draft picks, or they've got the most NFL number one draft picks, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, and, you know, if you count Reggie, the most Heisman trophies. There are things USC has that it's just going to have. I mean, there's no way you can take away. I mean, there are still kids coming to USC because, or who got first involved watching USC because of Reggie Bush. That's almost unbelievable. I mean, how many years later? These kids were like, you know, 6 years old. I don't know when they first saw Reggie. But, so USC's got a lot going for it. They just haven't had, you know, maybe felt the need to spend money where they were able to do things without spending money. So I just think it's the kind of natural evolution that happens, and you haven't been, you know, budgeting to do this, and you haven't had that position, and you just, you know, I mean, you just don't see like you see at some of these places where they just have a whole bunch of former coaches, you know, college or NFL, on their staff, and but not as coaches, and all kinds of support positions. That's never been the case at USC, and that's probably the next place that USC has to go. But they've been so. I mean, look where they are now. I mean, if you look at what's happened at USC in the last 3 years, it's impossible for them to be the number three team in the nation after winning the Rose Bowl with the number five recruiting class. There's no way. I mean, nothing in the recent history would tell you that that should happen. But it's USC. And here we are.
There, that is very true. Let's go. Tarek has a question. He goes, if Kevin Scott is able to return for fall camp, where do you see him contributing?
Tarek, we haven't seen him, you know, decide to contribute to this point. So it would really be speculation. He would have to. And maybe if he does come back, or if somehow, I mean, I don't think we have any insight to whether that's possible or not. But maybe if he did, and I mean, I think he has the tools, to contribute. But in the 2 years, I don't think we've seen any indication that was going to happen. So I wouldn't speculate on where he might contribute until he really decides he wants to contribute.
Yeah, that's, I mean, well, maybe he's out there for spring football too. We just don't know. Spring should be very interesting, and they'll, you know, he's one of the guys we'll keep an eye on. Edwin had a question, Dan. He said, the additional enjoyment you bring USC fans, especially during the off season, is greatly appreciated. I'm not sure how I'd get through the winter, spring, and summer without football. Thank goodness USC basketball is making a run for March Madness too. And now I can brush up on my bracketology. Anyway, this one is for Dan. I saw the announcement that Kennedy Polamalu's unemployment is short-lived, and he will be returning to the NFL. But it's also made me wonder if Clay even sent an olive branch to Kennedy and offered something on his staff. Don't get me wrong, after so much coaching turmoil, I'm thrilled to see our staff pretty much tact, but it would be nice to have Coach Kenny Polamalu even on a consulting capacity, and especially to help with recruiting. So you know if anyone reached out to Kennedy before the NFL came calling. Fight on, and let's get five in a row in basketball. Edwin.
Yeah, Edwin, you know, I don't think there's anybody here that doesn't just absolutely love Kennedy and would love for that situation to have you know, maybe had a chance to play out. From what I hear, and whenever it's brought up, what you hear is that there were things that, you know, involved in his last time here that make it not possible for him, you know, to return. And other than that, you know, there are some of those kinds of things that, you know, you don't go any, you know, further than that. But when you do raise that with people, that's what you hear, is that there may not have been a way, you know, for to put that together in terms of the last departure. And, you know, I mean, I remember it wasn't a couple of weeks after he left, gosh, how many years ago was that, after the Sun Bowl? And he was at Galen Center and with a bunch of USC people around, and just, you know, a wonderful, you know, guy, thrilled to be back at USC for a Sunday afternoon basketball game, as I remember, and in the Founders Room, and you know, thrilled to be a Trojan and always a Trojan, and yet, you know, with a lot of people saying, man, I wish you could come back and all that, I just don't think it's a possibility, as much as you have all these, you know, things about, you know, Kennedy that you really love to see be able to happen at USC. I just don't think that's in the cards.
Yeah. And Dan, before we move on, you talk about, you know, former USC running back coach. There's some rumors going around about the current USC running back coach, Tommy Robinson, and maybe going to LSU to go with Ed Orgeron, if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I you'd be crazy if you weren't interested in Tommy if you were Ed Orgeron. I mean, you were on that staff with him, and you know what a you know, wonderful coach and person and all that Tommy is. I know. So if you're LSU, and they just had to fire two coaches this last weekend, which is just interesting. I mean, they reassigned one, and the one's gone. And they're moving people around in positions. So it would make sense if you're, you know, somebody on that LSU staff to say, you know, we're really looking at somebody like Tommy Robinson. But the last story we've heard is that the coach, trying to think of his last name, the Louisiana Tech running back coach from New Orleans is the guy who's going to get the job. And, I don't know that they could in any way talk Tommy out of leaving here. He loves USC. All he said when he went, you know, when he didn't get held over by Sark, was that he wanted to come back. He went to Texas for a couple of years, and he's had a great year recruiting, and he's got, you know, Stephen Carr coming in, and the opportunities there. And I don't even think Tommy would consider anything other than a path to a head coaching job would be the only thing that, you know, might attract him. But again, he moved three times in 4 years. I just don't think he wouldn't want to make it 4 and 5. And when you talk to him about USC, here's a guy, you know, he's been a lot of places, you know, from Miami to Arizona State, Texas, and he just raves about USC, that there's nothing close, that it's just, you know, the best place he's ever been, best place he's ever coached. And, so, you know, I don't know that there's anything that I can't see LSU being able to put together an offer that would be one of those, man, you cannot afford to turn it down. I just don't see that, and I don't see USC allowing that to happen. But, you know, you never want to say never, never want to predict, you know, 100%, but that would be a shocker if Tommy left, and that would hurt. He's just a terrific guy and a terrific coach, and you just couldn't ask for, you know, a better person in that position.
We got JJB wrote in. He said, I love the podcast. Awesome. This one's for Dan. So he was out there reading some of the USC message boards, Dan. He said, there was a guy who appeared to be a USC football fan. He got a copy of the roster of one of the big football schools in the SEC, which he won't mention. and then went on to each player's Instagram account to see what he could find. He got about 23 or 24 pictures of players from this SC powerhouse with new cars, most of them expensive. One was a BMW, which they said cost a lot of money. Another looked like a Maserati with the doors that opened straight up. They also showed a number of pictures with players showing off rolls of $100 bills. My question is, does the SEC cheat? If the answer is yes, then why doesn't the NCAA do something about it? And if one fan can come up with this much pictorial evidence just by snooping around on his own, you would think the NCAA investigator, who does that for a living, would be able to come up with at least that much and even much more. The players don't even seem to be trying to hide it. JJB.
I saw some of that. What I couldn't tell was it kind of a spoof thing where they were all trying to act like they were driving those cars and those were their cars and what have you. Obviously there are double standards. Matt Leinart was driving a Howell pickup truck without a bumper, and OJ Mayo was riding a bicycle, and Reggie Bush had a 9-year-old Impala, and they made it sound like USC was buying everybody that they could get their hands on. And yeah, it's a double standard. I mean, I still remember walking past at Kansas State, how long ago that was, walking past the players' parking lot at Kansas State and thinking, oh, wow, look at this. And, Ohio State has a guarded, they have an actual guard at the players' parking lot. So it's a different world. No question about it. But if you say, well, they'd have to, how could they not find this? You have to actually look for it to find it. Well, maybe you don't have to look real hard, but you actually have to look. And they're just not looking. I mean, let's face it. Ole Miss is in the jackpot a little bit because, I mean, they did things that the NCAA could not ignore. I mean, they just absolutely were throwing things out there. I just think it's a different world, and it's not going to change, and that's just the way it is. I mean, so I kind of let myself just think, oh, well, nothing's changing, nothing's going to change, and still you can beat them. I mean, I think that's one of the neatest things about the USC run a decade ago is, That drove the SEC crazy because they knew what they were doing. They were convinced USC had to be doing what they were doing because they knew they couldn't be any good had they not been doing some of the things they were doing. And they were sure USC had to be doing that. So if USC can get back there and still not be doing that, that's even like a double hit because it does drive them crazy that you can do it and you don't have to necessarily be buying players. And that's one of the fun things about being around USC football is knowing that, there is a way you can do it. And, I know it drove them crazy. I mean, for example, the SEC, they couldn't get over the fact that you could have like a pipeline from Sarah High School and you could have, Robert Woods, and Marquise Lee and George Farmer and one after the other, Dory Jackson, and those kids could come to USC on a bus, and they were getting more great receiving prospects than say the SEC would be getting out of the entire state of Georgia or Alabama and Mississippi put together or whatever. And they were convinced this isn't right. This isn't fair. USC's got some kind of advantage over us and blah, blah, blah. But as far as those Instagrams, I couldn't be sure if it wasn't somewhat of a spoof of kids. I mean, just the idea that kids would act like this is really cool that we've got these cars, whether they had them or not. At least you don't see that very much at USC. And they don't act like this is why we're going to USC. And, so that's kind of neat. But, I wouldn't worry yourself much about the NCAA following up on any of that. that isn't going to happen.
All right, we got one last one for you, Dan. Martin in Ontario, he said, now with the Rams playing in the Coliseum and all the new construction at USC, has there been any talk at all about starting a women's softball team? Is this something the new athletic director, Lynn Swan, has to start the conversation about? What other programs across the country could have a startup sport ranked in the top 20 without playing a game? Great work with the podcast. Fight on from Martin in Ontario.
Yeah, Martin, I think softball ought to be pursued because, as you say, baseball is a little tougher for USC to continue a tradition that was the greatest in all of college sports because of you can get to the major leagues just as easily through, you know, UC Irvine or UCLA state schools or Cal State Fullerton or who knows, even Pepperdine, Long Beach. It really makes it tough and spend a whole lot less in tuition when you divide up the, you know, the scholarships and all that. It's harder to put together a 30-some man baseball team that can win at the top levels at a school like USC. I don't think there's any question about it. Softball is a different story. You could recruit girls who aren't looking to go on and play professional softball, and really not the opportunity. And you basically say, we're going to give you a great education. And I mean, if you ever watch the NCAA softball tournament, you know, you'll watch Alabama and Oklahoma and Michigan and teams like that. And half their roster or more is from Southern California. And you just think, what would, you know, USC do if they introduce softball? I mean, you know, got to find a place, you know, to play. And I know people thought maybe where the Forum, the sports arena was, but that's going to be, you know, a soccer field. Could that soccer field that they're putting in, could you adapt that so that in softball season, USC softball could play there? I don't know. If I were USC, I would be exploring every alternative as to where they could put a softball stadium. And I think the payoff would be immediate. And I know they decided to go with the women's lacrosse because that got them into the East Coast recruiting. And that was a recruiting, you know, idea, for the, you know, in some ways, the general student population, just to go into the East Coast because that's where you were going to find most of those girls. But I think I would go with softball. I think you're right. I think it's if you got the right coach in here, you could win a national championship in just a couple of years. I mean, I think the opportunity would be that, you know, if you got the top kids in Southern California. Because the beautiful thing about softball is I think they have more scholarships than baseball, but you need money, you know, you don't need anywhere near the numbers that you do. You don't need the pitching staff. You don't need the numbers. You don't need relief pitchers and all the kind of, you know, backups and that. You can, you know, pretty much, you know, play the same kids all the way through. You know, one deep. If you're one deep and they're, you know, the best kids in Southern California, you can win a national championship. So I'd like to see them go in that direction. I think they could be really good, really fast, in ways in which nobody else in the country could be. So that's my two cents. I think you're right. I think I'd love to see them go with, women's softball.
All right. Thanks for that one, Martin. And, that's all we got, Dan. So we, you know, knock an hour out of the park here of podcasting. People were asking for it and glad we could deliver. And, thanks again for coming on and sharing all your insights.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Appreciate the questions. We got, basketball. We got women's softball. We got, former coaches and all that kind of stuff. We got a little bit of everything today. And that was great.
Yeah, lots of topics to discuss here on the Peristyle Podcast. All right, that's Dan Weber. Make sure you check out all his stuff up on uscfootball.com. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Most people know that buying or selling real estate is no small undertaking. Understanding the market value of your home, pricing, advertising, closing, and perhaps even selling personal property along the way are all examples of the real estate journey. And Michael Moline Real Estate has the experience to help make that journey an enjoyable one. Southern California real estate inventories are at historic lows, so there is no better time than now to sell your residential property. Whether you're moving into a bigger home or downsizing, personal property is often a component of the real estate transaction. Michael Moline Real Estate has industry expertise to help you with both your real property and your personal property as you get ready to transition. Michael Moline Real Estate specializes in properties located on the west side of Los Angeles and the southern San Fernando Valley communities. Allow Michael Moline Real Estate to give you a free comparative market analysis and home valuation so you know how much your home is worth today. Contact Michael Moline at michaelmolinerealestate.com. That's Michael, M-O-L-I-N-E, realestate.com.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.